Today we have a session on Azure Landing Zone, your first step in setting up your Azure for Enterprise. My name is Hassan Mohseni. I'm the Program Manager for Microsoft Reactor in Abu Dhabi. And Microsoft Reactors, as you know, are hubs for founders and developers to meet, learn, and connect to each other, and to learn about industry-leading ideas and technology from Microsoft and the open source community. It's also home to the Microsoft for Startups program with a diverse mix of hands-on workshops, expert panels, and community events. There is something for everyone. Check out our calendar of events on meetup.com and join our coming sessions. Our speaker today is Mujeeb Mohammed. Mujeeb is a cloud security architect at GE in Dubai and will be connecting with us today to share his expertise on today's session. Thank you, everyone, and I'll hand over the presentation now to Mujeeb to start the session.
Thank you, Hassan. Hey, hi. Thank you, everyone, from different time zones joining in. I'm Mujeeb Mohammed, as Hassan introduced. I'm a security architect working with GE. In today's talk, I just want to share my experience on setting up a sample or a simple landing zone to start migrating workloads to the cloud. So this is my experience with one of the recent landing zones which I have set up to migrate applications to a very specific region in Azure. So deriving from the experience, I just want to share a few steps, in fact, seven or eight different steps, especially from the security perspective, which each one of us can follow while we start on our Azure journey on setting up a landing zone and start before we start migrating something to Azure cloud. We just want to have this basic infrastructure ready. So a landing zone is a concept of cloud adoption framework. So if you read through the cloud adoption framework, it defines the landing zone in a much more detailed way. I just want to simplify the complexities of the landing zone. So if you are really looking forward to something really at a deep level or really at a complex level for if your enterprise is huge, this talk is probably not for that. It is just for a basic introduction of a landing zone. Just want to set the expectations there. So a landing zone is when you set up a multi-subscription Azure environment in the cloud. Say, for example, you have an organization, you have few departments in your organization, and they want to adopt Azure. And as a cloud administration team or a cloud platform team, you want to set up a basic cloud or Azure infrastructure for them. That's where you use Azure Landing Zone concept to set up a landing zone for them, where they have a different subscription, different management groups, and how each department can use their own Azure subscription independently, and how the cost, security, compliance, and all other policies would come into play with the landing zone. So once we have this landing zone set up, so all the applications which you want to might basically to start off with, the recommendation is to go with the applications which are not very critical to the business. So that way, if you have any such applications, you can start migrating those applications to Azure, or any greenfield or new product developments which you want to start in the cloud, that you can start in Azure. So for everything, cloud adoption framework is the place where an individual can start if they are trying to set up a landing zone, and if they want to learn more about the cloud adoption framework itself. And it's a comprehensive and detailed document provided by Microsoft. And when it comes to landing zone itself, there are different architecture of the landing zone. Today I'm going to only talk about a cloud native landing zone only, where you set up something in Azure and you don't have any connectivity back to your environment, and you just want to start hosting the applications on Azure in the cloud itself. So the link which is here, I think I can copy the same link in the chat window as well. This link from Azure gives kind of a blueprint on setting up different kind of landing zones. If you want to play with setting up different kind of landing zones models, so there are essentially three type of models: hub and spoke, hybrid, and pure on the cloud. So this link gives you real good examples on GitHub, and you can try it from this link. So what you see on the right side of the screen is a simple kind of a hierarchy of how things are organized in Azure. So at the high level entity in Azure is called a management group. So management group, you can think of it as a main container. Container not in the sense of a Docker container, it's just like entity to hold few things. So, and under a management group, you can have multiple subscriptions. So subscription is where the resources in Azure gets deployed. So the hierarchy of the scopes is like on the top level, you have a management group. Under management group, you can have multiple management groups or subscriptions. And the hierarchy follows like this. So there can be six different levels down under a management group. So when we talk about setting up a landing zone, I just want to give this eight different points or eight different areas to look out for when you're trying to set up a landing zone. So these areas are very specific from security perspective. So I'm not considering a lot of things from the architectural perspective, but so once these things are sorted out, I think it is good even from the architecture perspective as well. So, and this is the only slide I have. I'm not going to have any other slide. So everything which I'm going to talk about is this eight different steps or eight different logical units where we need to look into. The first one, when you start working on Azure, is to have Azure AD setup ready. So Azure AD is the foundational block of Azure. So it is the Azure Active Directory, which is very different from on-prem Active Directory. So don't compare them just because the name is Active Directory. So think of Azure Active Directory as a pure cloud-based identity management service. So first you have to set up Active Directory. So usually the best practice while setting up Active Directory is the purpose of Active Directory, Azure Active Directory, is to have users there who can access resources inside Azure. So either you can create resources or your own in Azure Directory, Azure AD, or if you already have an identity provider in your organization, you can link it with the identity provider. So you can do a federation with the identity provider back home, and that way you get all the best practices you already have in the identity management space in your organization. So you do it natively in Azure AD if you don't have a process, or fall back to the existing process using federation. The second thing which is recommended, say for example, if you're not using the federation with an existing identity provider in your organization, is you have to enable multi-factor authentication on Azure Active Directory just to protect, because identity is the first point where an attacker would compromise the whole system. So identity is something which is really critical to be protected. So the bare minimum recommendation on any cloud provider is enabling multi-factor authentication. So Azure recommends individuals to enable multi-factor authentication for all the users on Azure Active Directory. There is a concept of emergency accounts. So emergency accounts are the accounts where, say, for example, if your federation doesn't work for some reason, if the federation stops working with your back home identity provider, or say, for example, if you have a multi-factor authentication and for some reason the service is down. So there were instances when Azure MFA service itself was down and the users were not able to log into the system. So it is recommended by Azure that you set up emergency accounts, so which are more like break the glass accounts. So if something like this happens, an outage happens, and it is really critical to log into the system, so these emergency accounts can be used. But as a caution, please protect these emergency accounts, store it in a safe vault somewhere, because these emergency accounts usually would be given the global admin permissions inside Azure. So these are your keys to the kingdom as well. So the second rule of thumb is working on the roles inside Azure Active Directory. So by default, the account with which you create Azure Active Directory is an enterprise account, and with that you get an enterprise role. And the the basic other role which a user would create is a global admin role. So global admin is more like a privileged user inside Azure Active Directory, which can perform all the other remaining steps which you see on the slide, setting up organization layout, policy, shared subscription, things like that. So you need to create a global admin role and need to have some sort of process to monitor the actions performed by global admin, and more like a privilege identity management. Just ensure that this role is not misused, have some set of process around that. And after that, you can have roles like owner, contributor, reader, security admins based on the need of your organization. Excuse me. So once you have your Azure Active Directory defined and integrated either with on-prem IDP or have it working natively, and you have the roles clearly defined on what are the different roles you want to start off with, the third most important step is the organization layout. So in the last slide, I showed you the organization layout of management, groups, and subscription. So that is really important. I just want to give an example. Say, for example, if you're a small organization and you have two different groups who are trying to create two different business applications altogether. So what you could do is you could have a management group, root level management group. Under root level management group, you can create two different management groups, one for one business unit, another for another business unit. So inside the management group, you can either have two subscription, one for production, one for dev, or you can separate it out again based on the business requirements. So it is important to plan how an organizational layout is going to be like based on the based on your organization, your business needs. And plus, one important thing for when designing organizational layout is considering how you're going to expand this landing zone for future business needs. So it is really critical. So for this, my advice is to refer the existing architectures which are provided in the link here on the GitHub. So just refer these three different kind of architectures, and there you'll get an idea of how do you have an organizational layout. So once you define an organizational layout, from the security perspective, you have to set up some guardrails, which are more like policies. Say, for example, you wanted to create some Azure resources for the workloads to be hosted in a zone which is managed by GDPR. So your requirement is whatever resources you have to spin in Azure has only to be created inside that particular region. So using these guardrails, you can create set of policies, Azure policies, and you can say deny all the resources which are created outside of a particular region. Deny all the VMs which are created outside of EU and things like that. So these kind of policies on a higher level, right? So these policies defines your organizational security baseline and security health. So your team can work with the organizational cybersecurity team and business stakeholders to define what are the critical elements. So these policies can be security policies. These policies can be resource specific policies. Say, for example, you don't want to allow engineers in your team to create VMs with a very high configuration, maybe GPUs, and things like that. So you can restrict all those things using the policies. Or say, for example, you want the tax to be applied on all the resources which are created. So plan it accordingly. And once you have organizational policies identified, so one best practice with organizational policies is the organizational policies can be applied on the management group level and on the subscription level. So if I go back to this diagram, so an organizational policy can be applied here or say, for example, management group, which is IT, or it can be applied very specific to an ES subscription down under. So this is where you really need to plan. So the recommendation is all the common policies which are to be applied across organization would go at the top of the hierarchy where you enforce those policies. And as you go down below the hierarchy at the management group level, you apply, say, for example, if the management group is for a specific business in your organization, you apply those business specific policies at the management group. And at the subscription level, you can apply subscription specific policies. Say, for example, if you're running a production subscription, you want to ensure that all the resources which are created inside the subscription are tagged with something called prod, things like that. So once the policies are created and you are at this level where you're creating different subscriptions below, so subscription are the place where actual resources inside Azure would be created. So once you're there, so one of the best practice in Azure is to create one common subscription, which is called a shared subscription, apart from your workload subscription or the business subscriptions which would be created. So the purpose of shared subscription is to host the common shared services across Azure. So one common shared service is distributed denial of service protection in Azure. It's an expensive service, which is like around $3,000 per month. But what it says is once you enable DDoS service, you can use it for 100 public IPs in the same $3,000 cost. So it's important that you take the service away from creating it in a specific subscription to a common shared subscription so that all the subscriptions can refer to this particular shared subscription service. So similar with, say, for example, if you want to set up a firewall in your organization and you want, so firewall is more like a common resource which would be used by all the subscription, different subscriptions and application inside the subscription, you can create those firewalls, maybe next gen firewalls, which is there in Azure Marketplace, or log analytics workspace. So say for example, you want to collect all the resource log and you want to pipe those resource log to a shared SIEM system. Okay, so for that you need to create a common log analytics workspace and you try to push the logs here. And this log analytics workspace also is helpful for Azure Security Center. So Azure Security Center is more like a kind of a security monitoring tool inside Azure, which looks at the health of your Azure resources from security perspective. So you can channel all the logs from different subscription into this common subscription and you can tie that up with Azure Security Center. So once we are done with the shared subscription, the most important service in Azure from security perspective, which I would say is the Azure Security Center. So it comes in two tiers, free tier and the standard tier. You can start with the free tier or you can use the 1 month free package of the standard tier just to ensure that it pipes everything from all the resources and shows you the security health of all the resources which are running inside Azure. So after the Azure Security Center is set up, another important thing is how do you lay down your network topology and connectivity? By network topology, I mean, you know, what type of architectural designs do you want to have? Have something like hub and spoke model where you have all your shared services inside a hub and spokes are different subscriptions which consume these shared services. Is this the way you want the architecture setup to look like? So these are the discussions which have to be carried out between product teams, security, and the broader enterprise architecture team based on the business needs, the security, as well as the regulations, industry regulations across a particular region. And the connectivity is like, you know, how do you want to do, say, for example, you are developing applications for development environment. Okay, something is out there in development environment, which is a cloud native application, and you're developing it in the cloud completely. And you don't want this development application to be accessed publicly by somebody outside, because everything in Azure is hosted publicly. And this, say, for example, this is a web URL and you don't want it to access it publicly. So how do you want to restrict the connectivity of this particular URL, which is still under development, to people inside the company itself, inside the organization itself? So these are the few decisions which you need to take. So the provisions are available in Azure. So something to think about on the connectivity front, especially the example which I gave around securing the development environment. So after all this, I think the most important part which is missed out when we are initially setting up a kind of landing zone is the incident response. So we have set up all the security settings. We have the log analytics workspace. We have enabled probably diagnostic logs, activity logs, and we have our policies ready. A lot of data is flowing in, but what are we actually doing with the data? Do we know from where the traffic is hitting our application? Has there been any data leak? So incident response has to be planned. So if your organization have a native incident response capability, you pipe everything, all the information from Log Analytics Workspace or through Event Hubs to the on-prem incident response tool. Or you can also use in parallel the Azure native capability called Azure Monitor. There is a service in Azure called Azure Monitor to provide a basic incident response. Say, for example, recently I was working on one requirement where the team wanted to track any egress of data from the blob storage. So this was a secure blob storage for data archival and where a lot of kind of important information was kept. And so in the real time, there was a need to track if there is any egress from this particular blob storage because the blob storage was all tight and restricted. So these kind of alerts and mechanisms can be enabled using Azure Monitor. So these are given natively by Azure. So you can leverage all those alerts provided by Azure itself. So these are basically what I feel are the kind of high level different areas to look at if we want to set up a simple landing zone. I mean, this is for sure not considering all the complex architectural requirements, but this is a basic landing zone for any kind of basic organization setup. You have a couple of applications, you want to go live with them. So once you are done with setting up a landing zone, it might look something like this. So again, the snapshot which I have taken is from the links which I'll be sharing in the chat window. So you have this root group. Under root group, say there's an organization called Wingtip. So Wingtip has its management group. So an organization can apply its own organizational policies at the topmost management group, which is Wingtip. And you can start monitoring at that level itself. And you can have security center. So just because you are using those shared subscription, you are piping in the information or the logs from that. So all that information you can see it on the higher management group. So for example, the security administrator for your organization, the platform security team and all can monitor things at this level for the compliance, for any security or incidents which are created in your Azure environment. So similarly, you can have policy at very specific levels. And so this is an example of a shared subscription. You call it management subscription as a shared subscription. And this is one typical subscription. The landing zone subscription is for hosting your workloads in the cloud. So once you have a management subscription, you can push all the kind of common services which you want to leverage across Log Analytics Workspace, which we have created to pipe logs from all the different subscription to one particular workspace. From there, it might eventually be extracted out to a SIEM tool. So you can store all your secrets in a key vault in the common subscription, and all the other subscription can access the secret so that there is a tight monitoring of who is accessing the secrets from the key vault. Similarly, you can have storage accounts to dump in a lot of data, maybe for archival or if you want to archive some log data as well. So you can just put it here in the storage account. And the landing zone subscription is your typical workload subscription where you are creating resource groups and you're creating resources and your applications are running inside it. So this is it on the higher level. So if you have any questions, which I have not seen, if there are any, I can just answer them. Abhijit, I'm just trying to copy the link, and once I copy the link, I'll just share it.
Excuse me, I have a question.
Sure.
This is Mohal Ali. I'm one of the architects at Capgemini. Would you say it's better to start with in a sort of enterprise project with a sort of pre-built landing zone and then go back and make changes accordingly? Or would you advise to start and design the landing zone from scratch and then start building the block from the ground up? So essentially using the GitHub enterprise landing zone, which is Microsoft obviously starting point, or would you prefer to design from scratch and build?
So Michael, the landing zones or the reference architectures which Microsoft provides is a really good place to start off with. But what I have seen typically is there is a lot of agreements and disagreements across the team in the architectural board discussions. So I think it's a mess. We can start at least the discussion by taking the reference architecture from Microsoft into play. And then if it works out in your architectural board, it's better to start off with that because they have defined clear landing zones. But every organization, again, will have a different way to design their own hierarchies, especially around management groups based on the business units and things like that. But definitely, it's a very good place to start.
Okay, thank you.
Hi everyone, if you have questions, please send them across or just unmute yourself and ask them to our speaker. I got this session recorded, so we'll post it later on YouTube and it will be available for all on demand.
Okay, Chris has a question. Is Landing Zone new? When was it released? So Landing Zone is not a new concept. It's a concept for any cloud provider. So I'm not sure if they have renamed this term called landing zone very recently, but it has been there on the documentation for quite some time, and it has become an industry standard now to call the setup of your any cloud environment as a landing zone. Okay, what's a shared subscription? So the shared subscription is a subscription used to store a common set of Azure services. I gave you an example of distributed denial of service from Azure. So it's a service provided by Azure. So my personal experience, I think the way I started using that service initially was just to enable DDoS. I was enabling that service in every subscription because I did not read the documentation properly, perhaps, or the documentation was not clear. So when I started looking into the service and the cost, then I realized that, this service is not a service to be created for every specific subscription. So services like this can be moved out to a common subscription, so which can cater to multiple subscriptions together. For example, if you have maybe up to 100 different production applications running and they have 100 different IPs, public IPs, you can use one single DDoS protection plan service and you can keep that in a shared subscription and you consume it from there. So this is more from a billing perspective. So you have created a shared service, shared subscription for providing common resources, so the billing would be easier and this particular service is not duplicated across. Okay, Dani has a question. What about multiple tenant setup and how we can use this? Dani, I'm not really sure because I've not done it, honestly, multiple tenant setup. But if I directly fall back what landing zone is, the concept remains the same of how do you organize resources logically into different groups together. So I think the concept would probably apply similar to the multi-tenant setup as well. But I'm not really sure, I'm sorry. So I don't have a very confident answer for that. I think for those of you who are online, so I recently went through an article where you can set up the entire landing zone through infrastructure as code as well. So Azure has recently released something. It was still in the very primary stage, but you can codify entire thing and you can provision it through your CI/CD pipeline. And that's where you can track all the changes to the landing zone. I mean, just if you want to have an immutable infrastructure, so you can do it to the landing zone as well. Yes, Patrick, operations and business continuity are plan of a setting up a landing zone, especially so the cloud adoption framework, which I was talking about. If you get into the cloud adoption framework and read through different stages, so it does talk about BCDR as one of the important aspects of setting up landing zone. From operations, I believe I understand how do you operate the landing zone, in the sense how do you manage it, say, for example, either from the policies perspective or through creating a kind of channel for the administrators to log into the system and perform various activities. So yes, these are also the considerations for the landing zone. See, from the operations perspective, right, the example which I gave the SIEM system, so it has its own nuances. If you try to get into it, you know, how do you pull the syslogs, you know, what do you do with the diagnostic logs which you get, so you need to create a separate infrastructure for this using event hubs and things like that. So yes, it has to be considered while setting up the landing zone, and these are the nuances of it. And basically, on a high level, right, 80% of the times when we talk about the large enterprise organizations, who are bounded by different government regulations and who hold some really important data and things like that, they invest a lot to tighten their whole cloud infrastructure ecosystem, and they're very careful about migrating what apps they want to migrate to the cloud. And plus, they use a lot of tools from the marketplace, from different vendors to tighten their security in the cloud. So this is what I've seen. So the intention of this was, this talk was to give a very basic overview for somebody, right, who doesn't have very tight regulations and who just want to start with the cloud, exploring cloud for their organization, and then on expand it. So I just wanted to give a flavor of that. So I believe we have 10 more minutes. So if you have any questions, you can drop it in the chat box. As a tip, right? So when we are especially setting up Azure Security Center, most of the times I felt that although Azure Security Center is set up, it is not watched properly or continuously by if you don't have a dedicated security team, especially the operations team, they usually don't watch it. So there is an alert section inside Azure Security Center, which really gives some important alerts. Say, for example, if there is a kind of a suspicious activity on your Azure AD account, those kind of alerts would definitely be shown in the Azure Security Center alerts tab. So do keep a track of it. So Azure Security Center has recently released an automation feature as well. So if you really want to automate this whole stuff, you don't want to manually track it, you can use Azure Logic apps to automate the stuff if you're getting any alerts. So that can be either shared through email or if you are using any collaboration tool, that can be noted on a collaboration tool too. I think yeah, and another important thing which doesn't go with the landing zone perspective per se, but just to keep a watch out on, is the cost. I think I did not talk about the well-architected framework. So cost optimization is the first kind of pillar in the well-architected framework. So you can use Azure native services for monitoring the cost of your applications, and just try to see if you can get discounts from Microsoft if you're trying to use VMs, dedicated VMs and things like that. So that is one important thing. And also look out for services, okay? If you don't use a higher tier over lower tier of a particular service, don't go for a higher tier just because it is available. Because initially it's very difficult for any organization to control everything through the policies. Okay, so it becomes a question of flexibility versus giving flexibility and power to the product teams versus doing a micromanagement and controlling everything. So use Azure resources judiciously and have a plan to keep an eye on your budget and spending too, especially on Azure. So especially in my experience, I have seen log analytics. So most of the times, new teams would start enabling diagnostic logs for each and every activity. So just be careful with the diagnostic logs because it would soon pile up GBs and TBs of data, and that would really start costing you heavily on the log analytics front. So just be very cautious about what logs you want to enable from the diagnostic perspective and what log you want to avoid based on the business requirement. Well, I don't see any more questions coming in. If you have any questions, probably, if I can help you with something, you can drop me a note on LinkedIn. I can probably help you there, or probably if you can reach out to Hossam, he can route that question to me as well. And I think that's it. Hossam, do we want to conclude or wait for 5 more minutes? Yep. Thank you so much. I appreciate you all joining the call, and I enjoyed talking to you. And thank you so much again.